Welcome to Political Rewind. Jim Galloway, of course, the political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is with me. You read him in the paper on Thursdays and Sundays, and he oversees the Political Insider blog. Jim, I think it's fair to say that when we get our panel of citizens together, it's one of our favorite shows.
Oh, yeah. This is where I don't do any work. I just... They talk, I listen. Maybe I'll interrupt them here and there, but this has been, and what I like about this group is they've been here before. They know each other. Yeah. The stiltedness is gone. We're all comfortable and ready to go.
We do have a couple of new panel members. Jody Urini.
Yes, that's correct.
Let's start with you. You're in Decatur, and you're a pastor, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So... I'm going to ask you the same question that I'll ask everybody, and in this case, I'd love to have a pretty brief reply. I want each of you to tell me in a few sentences how you feel about President Trump's first 100 days. Jody?
Chaotic. Unpredictable. Scary. Those are the first words that come to mind. Disappointing. Because I really did want to believe that a lot of the talk was just hype to get elected. But the first 100 days have been wildly chaotic.
Okay, you were a Clinton voter in November?
Yes.
Okay. Our other new panelist, Ariel
Alaba.
Alaba.
Yes.
You are a student?
Yes, I'm a student at Georgia State. And I'm a journalism minor and a film major, so that's what brings me here today.
How's President Trump done these first 100 days? Give us a few of the words you would use to describe his term.
First, I would say interesting, for sure, and also unpredictable. I would use that term as well. It's been very interesting to see so much has happened in this short period of time.
Has he done well? In your opinion?
I would say he's done well to do some of the things that he said he's done and not so well at the same time. Also because, you know, there were some things that people were expecting to happen that have not happened quite yet. But we will see how the remainder of the 100 days.
All right. And we'll go into depth on some of the things you think he has and hasn't done that he needs to. Why don't we just go around? Brent, reintroduce yourself. Tell everybody where you're from and what you do.
Brent Walker, I'm from Macon, Georgia, and I'm IT director at Mercer University.
So, President Trump, first 100 days.
So hard to answer that question. I give him an incomplete, I guess. I think there's obviously problems with governing. There's some amateur hour going on sometimes, I think. But at the same time, I think there's unprecedented opposition and so much false narratives going around that makes it really, really hard, I think, to be effective.
We should remind listeners that you told us the last time we did a panel that you were on that you were a longtime Democrat, a couple decades, who in November voted for Donald Trump. So you have high expectations of what he may accomplish.
Mm. Maybe. I mean, it was the lesser of evils is the way I saw it, but yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Scott Auerbach. I'm a director of photography and was a reluctant Hillary voter. Generally have been an independent but left-leaning. My impression of the first 100 days has been unfocused, nepotism-ridden, and... a bit hypocritical when you look at the things that he and Republican politicians have were so adamantly criticizing Obama for that then Trump is turning around and doing, and they love it now that Trump is doing it. Those are my initial impressions and kind of slow moving.
Are we talking more than golf?
the use of executive orders, which, you know, and got Obama labeled as a tyrant dictator. And now they're calling these, quote, legislative achievements when they're not.
Karen?
Karen Vieira Verde. I am not from Georgia, but I live in Marietta, and I'm a registered nurse at a local area hospital. And, you know, I was thinking about this last night, about my impression of the first 100 days, and I feel as though I'm not just judging the president, I'm judging the Congress, too, because this is a new Congress as well. And the way I look at it is that these branches of government seem to have been throwing things up into the air with no consideration for how heavy the object is, how fast it will fall, and who's walking below. And so I've been given no reason to stop resisting.
Okay. And you were a Hillary Clinton voter, as I recall.
This is LaDan Pratt. I am director of finance for a technology company, and I lived in Georgia for about 26 years now.
And LaDan, the last time we did a show, you were an adamant Trump supporter. You are passionate about Trump. How's he done?
I'm passionate about whatever I do.
Okay.
This hour happened to be this. I think what I see is a hardworking man doing his best, and a lot of people are throwing obstacle in his way. So I think he's done a good job, and he's been trying all by himself, and he's been alone. He doesn't have that many helpers. Everybody tried to stop him. He keeps trying to defend himself, and it takes the focus away from the job. And he admitted to the mess and the rush they had to do for the Obamacare repeal. So, you know, we have few more years.
So we'll get a sense of a man who's educating himself as he goes.
I actually think that he educated himself in the last 20 years because he wanted to be a president 20 years ago, and he said it's not time, and he's been trying, but he hasn't really had help. I don't think everybody's against him. He's trying to win all these battles, and there are too many things are thrown at him. So, but he has created jobs. He had focused on few things, and I think it just takes more time.
Name's Colton Saugerville. I'm a senior at Auburn University.
And we forgive you.
Yeah, but we also you get the award for driving the furthest to be here.
Yeah, it was a long drive, but I'm sure it's worth it.
Yeah, Brent's a little bit disappointed. He's not a first coming in from Macon, so go ahead.
Well, I would say, you know, I have to agree with LaDan and Brent on some of the issues and the things that they said. I think Trump is doing as good as he can. I do think we're seeing a little bit of the inexperience and the fact that he is having to learn on the job. Now, I do think that there has been a lot of, you know, media backlash. The Russia story, Russia story, Russia story. It never stops. And there hasn't still, from the last time we did this program, you know, that we were all on here, the panel, I still haven't seen any evidence that links Trump directly with that. I'd have to say for me, you know, I thought healthcare, I thought that was kind of rushed. They should have really put a substantial package together before they tried to put that through. I think Trump should have gone for infrastructure or tax reform first. But I would say I think Trump's biggest defining moment in the last 100 days has been from the foreign policy perspective. And for me, the strike in Syria really gave me a lot more hope that Trump is acting in a more presidential manner, and that I think he has America's best interests at heart when it comes to dealing with our adversaries and allies overseas.
We should remind people, and I think they may have heard it in your answer, that you did vote for Donald Trump. You consider yourself to be a relatively moderate, I think, leaning person in politics, but Trump was your guy in 2016.
My name is Johannes Kleiner.
You're as passionate about Clinton as LaDon was about Trump.
Clinton, the Democratic Party, I was a big fan as the only person who could not vote in this election as an immigrant, a green card holder from Germany, very excited about the politics of Bernie Sanders. So while I couldn't vote, the rules are such that the system would allow me to financially support a candidate.
So, yeah, how about the first 100 days of Donald Trump?
First 100 days. I think they have been incredibly unproductive. And I think, as so many of my colleagues here have said, it felt rushed. It felt unfocused. And I think if he would have run a business that way, he would have been fired a long time ago. So I think a lot of things tied up in court, a lot of things not working out, I think very unproductive.
All right, you've given us in your brief answers a lot that we can dig into. Jim?
I've got just an initial question, and I think kind of Scott touched on it a little bit. In November, I mean, Donald Trump's main selling point was, I'm not a politician, and yet we have a president who's really struggling to work with Congress right now.
With politicians.
With politicians. And it's, you know, it's he's no Lyndon Johnson. He doesn't know where the levers are in order to pull them. And I'm just wondering, between November and now, have you learned to appreciate the art of politics a little bit more? I mean, is the vision of an outsider brighter or a little bit more dim? Who wants to jump up on that one?
I'll jump in. This is Karen. The election cycle is my Super Bowl. Like, I love politics, and I had an opportunity over the past couple of months to get my hands deep into flipping the sixth. And that gave me a much more eye-opening perspective on how the inner workings of politics in a much different way than I had in other points in my life. So that was really exciting. And when I'm watching the news or when I'm listening to a press conference, I'm hearing it, knowing what could possibly be going on in the background. So so it's giving me that just in the past couple of months, that's given me a different perspective, because otherwise it's just it's like a party to me, and I love it, and I want to dive into it and know everything, all the stats.
Brent, I think the last time we talked, I mean, you were very excited about Trump as an outsider, I mean, have you?
Sure. Yeah, there's a little bit of that. I tend to feel that the system that we have in place is problematic, obviously, in the way that you have to work it, and how much money is involved in things, and you know, I'm straying away. I don't know if I have a really good response.
Yeah,
without regard
to the campaign money. Mm-hmm. Trump, as an outsider, trying to figure out how to work the system to accomplish his goals is what I think Jim was interested in.
Right. He's obviously very challenged with that. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And that, from that point of view, yeah, I'm a little frustrated. But some of it is his personality. I mean, it's not like any outsider would get in there and be the same way. He's got his ego involved there, and you know, he seems really hard to really make much concessions on things, and I think that's part of politics, right? And that's hard, you know.
Yeah, this is Johannes. Mm-hmm. For me, mm-hmm. It really highlighted the first 100 days the art of, ironically, for the lack of a better word, deal making. Uh-huh. And I think there is a very distinct difference between political deal making and business deal making.
Absolutely. Oh, explain that. That's a good point.
Well, I think as a business CEO, you are the center of power. You have a lot of chips in your hand in that one person. You can push your agenda. Whereas in politics, you have to deal with a Speaker of the House. You have to deal with a minority leader. You have to deal with the Senate. You have to deal with fractions of your own party that you tag onto.
And a constitution.
you have to deal with the Constitution, right? But I mean, business people would have to deal with the law. I mean, there's a lot going on, but I think political deal making, without being able to say what that would exactly be, but in the mold of a Lyndon Johnson and
somebody else want to weigh in on this? Yeah, Jody.
Well, I think the thing that's disappointing is he does not do himself any favors by the people he surrounds himself with, and I think that's been a lot of the disappointment, and I'm trying to be open-minded. I really am, because my parents were, they were all on board with Trump, and my father's Cuban, Cuban-American, and we just don't talk politics. But I think that if he had humbled himself and surrounded himself with some people that could give him some advice into how to deal with the politics, the game, if you will, of politics, which, let's be honest, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. It's a game. It's playing people. It's getting people to follow you. It's being a leader. And I feel like he has not adjusted from the CEO model to being a leader that people can follow.
Colton, you want to jump in? Huh?
Yeah, you know, this is Colton here. My whole view of Trump with this as well is him being an outsider. I think, like you said, it's a game. But what Trump's done from the very get-go is he's making up his own new rules. I mean, the way he handled the media, the fact that he didn't show up to, you know, the correspondence dinner with the media. You know, he's doing things in a different way
is that good
no
or
one's
bad?
Done before. We don't know yet.
Okay.
That's the thing. I mean, that's the interesting thing from all this, whether you're for or against, is that America's seeing, and, you know, that's one good thing that came out of this election. People are becoming a lot more aware and wanting to get more involved within the political and democratic process that is America.
So I want to pick up. LaDon, in your description of the first 100 days, in your way of describing President Trump, you made him sound like a man who has been sort of let down by everyone around him as he's tried hard to work to accomplish things. His advisors, Congress. Is that how you see it? Is it helpful that he's the outsider, or does he have himself to blame for continuing to be an outsider?
Yeah, I think this is a personal opinion, but yeah, the fact that he's an outsider, I think, is a good thing. We had all these people in politics, in Congress, in Senate. They're all politicians. And I think somebody coming and take the heat, don't stop his tweets, miss the meeting, don't invite the photographers in. Yeah, let's do it that way.
Someone who knew how to work the system, and we're going to get into this more after we take a break in a minute. Somebody who knew how to work the system more than he did might have been able to get repeal and replace accomplished, even though he let Congress take the lead on that, right?
Right.
Because he was an outsider and wasn't quite sure how to move. So in that case, does that hurt him to be an outsider?
In that specific case, yes, it hurt him. But, you know, you live and learn.
Okay, fair enough.
I think we make a mistake with our current interest in outsider candidates and with our current kind of fetishization of the business world and the cult of capitalism as applied to public service, which is a very different thing than capitalism. I think we make the mistake that inexperience is equivalent to fresh ideas. And that's not necessarily the case. You can be incredibly inexperienced and yet still not come in with valuable new ideas.
Would you deny that Trump has fresh ideas, whether you like them or not?
Oh, no. I would not say that.
But you would say he does have fresh ideas, even though you don't necessarily like them?
I think he does have some fresh ideas, but I also think that he is so unable to understand how government works in our constitutional democracy that he is being easily played by the people who do understand how it works.
Show of hands before we take a break. How many of you, whether you like him or not, wish he'd stop tweeting so much? That's 1, 2, 3, 4. And it's, it's interesting. Almost evenly divided in that. All right, look, we got to get to a break. You're listening to the Citizen Panel of Political Rewind. I'm here with Jim Galloway. We're going to continue talking about some of the specifics, the wall, the budget, healthcare.
Healthcare and government by family.
I love that. All right, we're going to take a very quick break and be back in just a moment.
I'm Keith Burnett. I'm with Nostalgic Media. Essentially, we save old memories. We digitize movie films, slides, photos, and videotapes. The benefit to Nostalgic Media to be an underwriter is credibility. Our customers place a lot of trust in us. Those old films, those old videotapes, they're priceless. They don't want to hand them over to just anybody. Customers often tell us they trust Nostalgic Media because we sponsor public broadcasting. It's like a seal of approval.
To find out more about becoming a corporate sponsor, email sponsorship@gpb.org.
The high rate of veteran suicide has no easy explanation, but the data show they are turning to guns to do it.
Veterans are much more likely to commit suicide with a gun than civilians, so that access matters.
I'm Audie Cornish. How some veterans take it upon themselves to put guns out of reach this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Find out more this afternoon from 4 to 7 here on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind, one of our favorite shows today. We have our citizen panel back with us. Six of you who are back for your second time talking about what's going on in politics in Georgia and in the country. And we have two new panelists joining us. We're going to dig in to some of the specific issues, some of the promises that President Trump made, and see how you feel about the fact that they appear to be harder to accomplish than perhaps he thought. And Jim?
Let's start with the wall.
You've got it.
Okay. All right. We're going to start with the wall. Donald Trump said he wanted that money, at least $1 billion or so, into a continuing budget resolution. Then Democrats said no. And he said, and Donald Trump said, okay, we're going to call it budget border security.
Border security.
Reduce the amount a lot, and let's move on.
But he still insists
the wall is going to be built, and Mexico is going to pay for
Trump
it.
Trump supporters, who's disappointed that he hasn't been able to move forward on the wall at this point, and whose fault is it?
Brent?
Disappointed, definitely. But I still think it's early. I mean, it's still early.
I mean, would you characterize that as a betrayal or is just a strategic tactical move just to move the ball down the field?
Yeah. I don't think he's abandoning it. I don't think that's where he's going with it. If that's what you're asking, I think it's still going to be a priority to build the wall.
Ariel.
I agree. I'm not a supporter of Donald Trump, but I do think that it's something that he's just going to figure out a new plan of how to get it accomplished, but right now isn't the right time.
Should he do it?
I don't agree that he should do it at all.
Okay. Who else wants to weigh in? I mean, it's a big campaign promise, Colton.
Colton here, by the way, again, I mean, even though he just introduced me. But my thing is like I said in the last program, I honestly didn't really think the wall was going to be a thing that really even happened. You know, I'm a communication major and I study rhetoric and different things like that. And I saw it more political puffery in a way. But so I don't feel betrayed at all. The wall hasn't been built. But I think, going back to what people are saying about Trump being a businessman, one of those things that makes him different in his mindset than a politician is the idea of business. You do multiple tries and you're going to fail most of the time, but it's learning from those things and getting it right. He's going to go in there, and yeah, the Democrats deny him that money in the beginning there in Congress, and he puts in a different, area, border security. We'll see what happens. But I think he'll get the wall built. It may not be as big as we thought or as encompassing as, he promised his supporters, but I do think it's going to get through.
Now, we talked about health care. Did we have a panel that met after the health care collapse?
No. Okay, so this is the first panel. Since we did this early in the year.
Health care was just rolled out the day that we all got together the
okay.
first time.
All right. Well, let's if we could shift to that topic. What did y'all think of that rollout and what it portended for each of you individually? I mean, how was it going to affect you? We don't know what this next rollout is going to be like yet. But how would that last one have affected you personally?
Jody, you were shaking your head as Jim was asking that question.
I did. I thought it was just ridiculous the way that it was just thrown out, in the manner in which it was thrown out. But I have several people and family that this would affect them. Two of my very closest friends, they would have no health care if it were not for this plan. So, and now the sneak attack apparently that's coming with the provision, I think, or the amendment or addendum
waivers. Waivers reportedly states would be able to opt out of the list of most shall we say the most important areas of coverage, like emergency room coverage, maternity coverage, and such.
Why do you call it a sneak attack?
No, this second one.
Why do you call it a sneak attack?
Because apparently they're going to try to sneak it in before the 100 days is
up. Well, again, we're taping on Thursday. We don't know. By Monday, we'll know when this airs.
Right, I mean,
but it doesn't look like it's going to go through.
Right, right, right.
Well, it probably will not pass the Senate, even if it does pass the House. However, go ahead.
No, I was just interested in the term sneak attack, and I see what you're saying. So in terms of health care, have any of you been surprised by how, as Paul Ryan, the Speaker, pushed hard to get that first bill through the House, how strong the opposition from people like your neighbors seemed to be? Every poll shows that people, by a pretty good majority, kind of like the Affordable Care Act now that they have a chance to think about it.
Dan, you run your company's finances, which I'm assuming includes a good bit of health care coverage. What impact would that with the House version that was abandoned? What impact do you think would it have had on your company?
I don't think the rates are going up just a little bit, about 7%. But it's a small company, and really we don't have that much of an impact. But back to the healthcare, I think they rushed it to put it together. And everybody opposed it. But why did they oppose it? The main reason they opposed it is because they said they did not have time to read it and understand it, therefore no. You should have discussed with us, and we should have brainstormed to put it together, right?
No, you had opposition from the American Hospital Association, from almost all the nurses groups, from all the doctors groups in the country. This was not something that they wanted to be actively a part of. Perhaps they have people on the Hill who lobby, but the language in this bill, once it landed on the desks of the people in these groups, said this was not the best thing for patient care. And
or would it be not the best thing for their raising rates continuously?
I'll tell you what, nurses don't benefit from rates being raised. I promise you that. And doctors, I worked with emergency room docs the longest, they don't benefit from rates being raised. Most docs don't get a kickback.
Well, the docs are not the owner of the hospital. We are talking about the business owner and whoever owns the hospital, the stockholders and
private
the shareholders.
Hospitals, but there
so
are
somebody
non-profits.
Has to pay the bill.
Can I interrupt here just 1 second? I'm wondering if we've kind of had a fundamental shift here in healthcare dialogue. And how many of you would agree that the government ought to abandon all contact with healthcare and just let the market decide? Anybody there? We got one.
Guys.
Brent?
Okay. I can kind of go both ways. I mean, you know, honestly. I mean, I believe there should be a safety net for healthcare, just like a social safety net. But it shouldn't be a permanent
thing. See, I think that percentage would have been a lot larger 2 years ago.
Yeah, Jody, you were a
Yeah, I have two points. Okay, the first item is how many years did the Republicans have to put a plan together? How many times did they lobby against the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and say, we will repeal and replace on day one? They had at least 4, 5, 8 years to come up with a plan. And then the plan that they did put out was flawed. There was very little backing for it. And this is the interesting thing, is the most conservative wing of the Republican Party was against it, and so were the moderates. So, and that's in their own party. How does that happen?
Well, and moderates weren't against it.
It was the
far left and the far right that were essentially against it.
And the far right group that was against it too, that was the Freedom Caucus. And I was actually very upset with that whole debacle because they were worried about the creation of entitlement. Well, the thing is, when you already have a bill that's law that includes certain entitlements, you can't just strip away all the entitlements and expect that you're going to be able to take care of the people that honestly can't afford the health insurance. So I don't agree with the majority of Obamacare. There's obviously some great parts about it in the Affordable Care Act. But I think there's better ways to get to where we need to be with healthcare than what's currently, you know, available. But, you know, they just need to really take some time and really put in the effort.
Okay,
so
but they had 4 years.
I completely agree with you on that. I think it was very sloppy, and I wish they had better.
It's not a Democrat versus Republican thing.
No,
honestly,
I think it
honestly.
Is, actually.
It's really
it
not.
Is, because
we don't need
for 8 years.
In that position. We
for
need to
eight,
discuss and come together honestly. And
no, for
we don't
8 years,
need to be pointing fingers.
Barack Obama mm-hmm. was, I think, came under an incredible amount of opposition from the Republican Party.
Sure.
And so now that the tables are flipped, oh, poor Donald Trump. Suddenly they're attacking him.
Well, it's not just, let me comment real
but
quick.
But it is please. Republican and
it's,
Democrat.
It's not
it
just
absolutely
the Republican,
is.
I mean, it's not just the Democrat Party that's anti-Trump. There's a Democrat media complex. You guys are
okay. We're going to talk about that. Johannes, you're trying to get in.
Yeah. I actually agree with Brent in that I think one of the flaws of the healthcare legislation as it is handled is that it is so bipartisan and that it has become so bipartisan. And I think even to the detriment of the Republican Party. Because
mean nonpartisan. Nonpartisan.
No, it has become very partisan, right?
Partisan,
so
it should be
in the same way that President Obama had only Democrats supporting his bill, only Republicans
right.
are supporting
it shouldn't
supporting
be Obamacare or Trump Care. It should be the Affordable Care Act or American Health Care Act or whatever you want to call
Let's
it.
Find
it
the
should
best
be
thing
health
that works
care
for
everyone in this country, citizen, resident, etc. But I think it will turn out to be very dangerous for the Republicans to have such a partisan approach to healthcare because you can already see the infighting and what Colton said, we're talking about a patchwork system and taking away benefits from people. So the next suggestion is let the states handle it. So you're going to have a 50 states patchwork that will have huge economic implications for people moving back and forth to states who offer the best benefits. That's not sustainable.
Do we think that President Trump, in watching that fall apart, learned anything, LaDon, that is going to help him as he moves forward this time? We're told that he's been working healthcare quietly ever since the first bill collapsed, and that he's been doing it through his vice president, Mike Pence, quietly working the Hill, which has kind of brought them to the place where they are at the end of the first 100 days, looking at a new measure that they hope they can get through. So did Trump learn from this, and will it help him going forward on other things?
Yeah, I hope they do, because with the tax reform coming up and with the wall, they're trying to narrow it down. So hopefully they know not to rush it and try to kind of brainstorm and bring everybody in and take people's feedback before they put the bill together.
How many people here are okay with what the Congressional Budget Office has said about the legislation? And we haven't seen scoring on the new measure, but presuming the score will show that there will be many, many people who will lose health care, how many people think that's okay at this point if it gets something? Anybody, show of hand. Is it okay if, say, 10 million, 15, 20 million people lose their health care?
A large number of those will just opt out because of the change of the law. That's the reason why they'll lose their health care.
That's an argument that I think Republicans like to make, mm-hmm. but I think Democrats counter by saying mm-hmm. they're not going to have health care because they're not going to be able to afford it anymore.
People
because there's not going to be a subsidy
healthcare.
From the government. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think what you're saying is an argument made by one side, which is fine.
I think, I think it bears out, though, that argument. I think it does. And I really believe that, and I've read some studies. I'd have to go back because it's been a while, but I just tend to believe that, just think about it. How many people that are forced to have health care that are young and don't really need it will simply say, I'm not going to pay for it.
So, Karen, when that happens, when there's no longer a mandate, they're going to show up at your hospital without insurance, right. You're going to have, and your hospital's going to have to take care of them anyway.
Or worse, they're not going to show up at the hospital, and then something grave might happen. There, to kind of cavalierly say that, and it is a talking point. I'm not saying that you're saying it, but to cavalierly say that people are okay with losing their health insurance. They've never seen the face of somebody who panics when they find out that their health insurance card isn't going through or that their child's health insurance needed to be re-upped, or, you know, when they're going working on Medicaid. There is a panic. There is a concern. There are people who can't get surgery because of that.
Yeah, let me, if I can follow on something that Johannes said, is, I mean, the need for a Republican-Democratic bargain on this, okay? The bottom line for Democratic participation in anything about this is that Republicans drop the repeal language, that they work on fixing it. You think something's wrong with it, fix it. Colton, LaDon, Brent, If Trump should move in that direction, would you be okay with it? Would you think that that's a betrayal?
I don't think it would be. I think we need to find the smartest solution. I'll say, this is Colton, by the way. I think we should find the best solution. I agree. We do have a healthcare problem. We're already in the mess that we're in with Obamacare. My thing is, for me, repeal and replace wasn't the number one concern I had. I don't see why Trump just dives straight into infrastructure bill. I mean, look what happened to I-85. You know, that just shows a hint of what's to come for the rest of the country.
Let's get through everybody before the break. LaDan?
Yeah, I'm okay with it if he compromises, if he changes a few things. And I'm also okay with it if some people lose their health coverage.
And Brent, what about you?
Absolutely. Yeah, repeal means that didn't matter to me.
So what's interesting about that is that Donald Trump, President Trump, in the first thing he took on, did have the opportunity to reach out in a way that a Republican normally couldn't, since he's not really, he's nominally a Republican, and could have put together a bipartisan effort, could have actually asked Democrats to get involved, and could have been a real healer in all this. Does that occur to you?
I don't think it would have happened. I don't think the Democrats would have been
involved.
Do you
think the lines are that hard?
I do. I do. And he had to, you know, use repeal language to try to bring in those far right Republicans.
All right. Mm-hmm. Let's we're going to have to break in a couple minutes, but let's try to at least start getting a few answers. Johannes, you're the logical guy to go to on this. The one thing for certain that President Trump has been adamant about and has really acted on the way that he said he would is immigration. Mm-hmm. They are stepping up deportations, and it looks like that will continue and maybe expand. He's not using the same harsh language he did during the campaign. Nevertheless, they are working, they are moving to get people who are here illegally, many of them, out of this country.
Yeah, I think that is a mistake. On so many levels, I think there is actually a middle ground, and it happens to be some of the approaches that the Obama administration took in later years to say, if we catch people in close proximity to the border, if we find people that have been here less than 2 years, less than a year, I can get behind an approach that says, people who come without documents and we catch them in these situations, we catch people who commit extreme crimes, we send them back. But I think people who have lived in their communities, who have contributed, in many cases paid taxes, done their fair share of shouldering the burden of living in this country, they should have an option to live here with documents. And what I think is very important is that if you look at the kind of people that the Department of Homeland Security and ICE is asking for help in local municipalities to get them out, sometimes these are people who have not been convicted of crimes, only charged.
Okay, you made your point. LaDon, are you glad that the president has been has begun to be as tough on immigration as he promised during the campaign? You're a pretty big supporter.
Yes. Yes, of course. I think if an illegal immigrant without documents commit a crime against a U.S. citizen or any other human being, yes, send them back.
Yeah, being against, being for sanctuary cities is unconscionable.
If they commit a crime,
I mean, it really is, and I don't. I'd like somebody to explain it to me. Federal law is in charge of immigration, and how can a state or a municipality choose not to enforce or do what federal laws that we have?
So you're frustrated that right now, in addition to his policy on refugees, the executive order on refugees, he is also being blocked now by a federal court in terms of enacting his executive order on denying federal funds to sanctuary cities. All right, we're going to talk about that. We've got to get a break in. We're going to talk about who you all perceive, if you're for Trump, as those who are kind of against him, working hard against him in an improper way. And then we're going to talk about why opposition from the rest of you continues to be so important. But let's do this. Let's get another break in. You're listening to Political Rewind. We're going to be back with our citizen panel after a short break.
If we already heard from you during our spring fun drive, thank you. If not, there's still time for you to join us as a public radio hero. With federal funding in question, this spring we're counting on support from everyone who listens to GPB. Please take a moment to do your part now at whatever level is right for you. Go to gpb.org and click on the green donate button, and thanks so much for your support.
When you're in the business of preserving historic buildings and neighborhoods, you don't really get any do-overs.
The thing about preservation is that if you're not successful, there's no going back. Something gets torn down, it's gone.
I'm Kai Ruzdahl. Old buildings have more than just historic value, you know. We'll tell you about it next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6 on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. We're here with our citizen panel, Jim Galloway and I, talking to them about how Trump is doing in his first 100 days or so. So, federal courts blocked him on refugees. A federal court, a district court, has now blocked him on stopping federal funding for sanctuary cities. Karen, are you glad the courts are there to jump in, or do you think that the president, without regard to your partisan loyalties, the president should not have to, the court shouldn't be able to stop him from issuing important executive orders?
Well, I will put the same faith in the courts that people put faith in Donald Trump. I will say that these judges have read the proceedings and said, there's a reason, there's something illegal about the language in this, and I'm going to put a stop to it. So that's how I'm going to lay my faith down.
Daria?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think bottom line, there's just not enough time being put into looking at these proceedings. And I think that, you know, it really is necessary because it affects so many people. Millions of people will be affected.
Yeah, Jody, I suspect your church probably deals with the refugee issue in Decatur. Was there a way for the president to do something about restricting refugees coming into the country in a sensible way? Did the right, or was it just the wrong issue to begin with?
I think it was the wrong issue to begin with.
Has your church taken any position? Has it offered itself up as any kind of a refuge?
Well, we're actually we're meeting in Clarkston right now in the community center, which, for those of you that are not aware, Clarkston is very, very diverse.
Right. Yeah.
And United Church of Christ in general takes the position of a strong stance that sides with our immigrants. And so our church does as well.
Colton, LaDon, are you frustrated by the way the courts have treated the president? One of you jump on in here.
Colton here. I'll jump in real quick. Yes. You know, illegal immigrants are illegal immigrants with the refugees ban and the refugee status as well. But I think Trump's definitely looking at other options, that strike in Syria. Like I said, I think his mindset's changing a little bit more of, you know, maybe addressing the fact that they wouldn't have to go other places and be displaced from Syria if Assad was gone or there were safe zones in Syria or things of that nature. So I think his idea of how to handle the situation and what he's doing, I think it's changing as he's seeing, you know, things unfolding and in the foreign policy.
real quick.
I just want to come quickly back to what Brent said. I think there is this misconception that the people who are being deported are these heinous criminals. Mm-hmm. The problem is that you can get deported for a DUI, where an American citizen gets slapped with a couple of hours community service and a fine. If you are an undocumented immigrant, you're out.
But Brent would say that's exactly right.
Yes.
That's exactly
right.
Why not?
Yes. Maybe that DUI person who got arrested, maybe they would have killed my son. Maybe they would have killed you. Why not?
Why do we have immigration laws if we're just going to ignore them? I don't understand that.
That's interesting. LaDon, you go right to the potential for them to become dangerous criminals, whereas Brent takes on this issue as you're violating our immigration laws, you should be sent back.
But
there's a very different approach.
To me, those should be two different issues. Deal with the DUI on the DUI level. So that undocumented immigrant goes to court-mandated community service or whatever, and you deal with the DUI as if you would deal with the DUI for any other person who is illegally.
We want to get a couple more things in here. We've got a good sense of where you all stand. Jim, we're the enemy, according to President
Trump. You and I are the enemy of the people. And I think there was a poll out this week that says most of Donald Trump supporters agree that
Brent's already said it.
Yeah.
I think it's
we had him check his handgun at the door.
So what about that? Has the media been the president's, if not enemy, strong inappropriate adversary? Brent, you brought it up, so why don't you start?
My eyes were just open. I mean, I really didn't realize. I'd always heard liberal media, when I was a Democrat, and I thought, oh, yeah, right. And my eyes are open, and it's so clear that the most mainstream media echoes what the Democrats say, and they take that line, and that's most of their talking points.
I think Scott, we haven't heard enough from you tonight.
That could have something to do with the fact that Democrats are closer to the mainstream of American opinion. Beyond that, I can't help throwing in Colbert's observation that truth does have a liberal bias. As somebody who really values truth and reality and the incredible job that journalism does and the importance of journalism and the free press in maintaining our democracy and in informing an electorate that the founders always thought would be an informed electorate, the attacks on the media and against any media that says anything that this president does not like, whether it's true or not, I find the most appalling and frightening aspect of this presidency, by far.
Why frightening?
Because when you deny reality the way he does, I think it leads to both division and to in extreme cases to strongmen fascist.
Well, I say that's the terminology that's always used to describe Trump. But apparently the media aren't scared about being strong-armed or thrown in jail, are they? I mean, they're constantly against him and are going to speak out. And so,
Joni.
And so just let me ask you a direct question.
Sure.
Let's just take, because you used Russia as an example earlier tonight. If that had even been, I mean, we're talking not even, it hasn't been 100 days, and there's an FBI, a CIA, a national security, basically, I think it's an emergency over the Russian hacking. If that had been Barack Obama, if that had been associated, would it have still been a liberal media?
Well, the fact that you believe this Russian tie.
How can you not
believe?
Because
there's no evidence. And there is no evidence. And this is the triumph of fake news. I'll tell you that.
All right, LaDon, so every poll shows that even Trump supporters don't think, they don't mind that he does. They say, yeah, we know he doesn't tell the truth a lot. And we don't care because we know that it's in the service of a larger good from him. We know he exaggerates in this and that. If he does exaggerate, if he does sometimes misstate facts, is the media's responsibility to correct those mistakes without being considered enemies of the administration?
No, it's not their responsibility, but, you know, they are not being fair. Okay, they are not being fair.
No, it's absolutely the responsibility. All right, let's
get the problem is it's not enough time to get into depth of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, these kind of discussion, it takes hours and hours and hours. So maybe 2-3 people can discuss it for an hour, but when it's 8 of us, it can't be happen. It's media are. They're his enemy just because, like he said, it's political puffery, right? He said few things, he exaggerated. If we are talking about Russia, well, let's talk about Clintons. They didn't work one day in their life. They made $19 million last year. In 12 months, how did they unwind those emails?
She's never worked?
No.
No,
they don't. Not on that salary. They get paid $165,000 a year.
Interesting.
That's their salary. $165,000 a year.
Right. We are virtually out of time. Karen, you get
how
one
do you
quick
make 19 million?
You got 20 seconds.
Let's investigate her. Facts, right. Facts are how this our whole civilization has been formed. Without facts, we wouldn't have cars. Without facts, we wouldn't have this microphone that we talk into. Without facts, we wouldn't have gone to college and gotten educated. If we stop believing what's reported to us, what is happening to us? We're idiocracy.
Colton, you want to get real quick?
Real quick. Well, to what Karen's saying, you know, like that study came out, over 80% of the media of Trump over the election and the 100 days has been negative for the mainstream media. But I would also say, look at the dossier. Look at other things that have come out that are completely unfactual. I think everyone should be a skeptic, regardless from both sides, from whatever media source you're looking at, because facts will be construed, facts will be spun, and that happens on both sides. It's our jobs to really dig deep and find the information for ourselves.
Right. They're not facts.
All right, I got to call a halt because we are completely out of time. Jim Galloway, as always. Well, no, this was even more spirited than the last time we brought this group
together. We're going
together.
To make sure everybody shakes hands as they walk out.
Thank you all for being with us for this edition of Political Rewind. We will get you back here soon because what you have to say, we have to be listening to, all of us. So thanks so much. And thank you all for listening. I'm Bill Nygut. We'll see you again at 2 o'clock on Wednesday for another Political Rewind, when, by the way, we'll have a phenomenal author of a brand new biography on Richard Nixon. See you then.